Greetings, welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadee, karup, guten tag, jiao, wee, viva, kat, bang, half a day, jai, janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan. Peace, how, go vegan. From the left coast of the genetically mutated McNugget pharmaceutical vivisection prison killitary industrial corpor nation in the cheese-covered post-constitutional bankster bankrupt bribocratic corruptocracy mocracy criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, home of Uncle Salmonella, where the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death is shoved down your throat and you're swallowing it. This is Go Vegan with Bob Linden. And today we prove once again that Go Vegan with Bob Linden is the most important radio program in the history of planet Earth as we endeavor to save planet Earth. Organic farmers sue Monsanto today on Go Vegan with Bob Linden. We talk to Jim Gerritsen, president of the Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association. He is the lead plaintiff in the lawsuit against Monsanto, and you won't believe your ears. You won't believe this story. You have to hear it. You have to tell your friends and family, but please, safety first. No texting while listening to Go Vegan with Bob Linden. And as if saving the planet from total toxic contamination, saving the food supply weren't enough for one episode of Go Vegan with Bob Linden, where we save the planet from Monsanto. We also want to save billions of innocent lives from torture and murder. So we continue the discussion begun last week with Karen Davis, PhD, founder of United Poultry Concerns, regarding the Rotten Egg Bill, H.R. 3798, a collaboration between the United Egg Producers and the supposed animal advocate, the Humane Society of the United States. Can you tell the difference between your animal rights group and the animal abusers against whom it is supposed to be protesting? Well, not when they are one and the same. The lines blur, and you have the Humane Society of the United Egg Producers. Anyway, I'll let Karen talk about her opposition to H.R. 3798 and HSUS coming up, or HSUEP. Well, you have to hear the start of the discussion also, and that's archived at goveganradio.com, February 12th program. You know, H.R. 3798 actually prohibits additional improvements to the so-called housing of chickens, and that prohibits that forever. Billions of lives are at stake. Therefore, isn't this the most important show in the history of the invention of radio waves, amplitude modulation, AM, and frequency modulation, FM combined? Yes, what's the topic elsewhere in the media? Contraception? Oh, great. Just what this, overpopulated planet needs. More people. Why does the corporate gov Enron ment need more people? Do we need more soldiers to fight wars? More prisoners to fill the corporate prisons? More meat eaters? I'm getting more and more serious about my candidacy. I mean, what choice do you really have? You have President Monsanto Obama and, some one percenter who drives around with a dog on the roof of his car. I tell you, you vote for me, Broccoli Bobby, and I will give you contraception, all right. My first day in office, I will assert my dictatorial powers, and contraception will be mandatory, except for vegans, okay? You want to have a child? Okay, well then, go vegan. I think that's the problem. The Jerry Springer audience is procreating, and responsible vegans are not. So I think we have to turn that around. Mother Earth would certainly appreciate that choice. Well, first, the animals. I mean, it's estimated that in the lifetime of a meat eater, a meat-eating human, 15,000 animals are killed. So imagine, if you will, surrounding each meat-eating newborn baby, the magnitude of that destruction, a pile of 15,000 corpses, dead animals surrounding her, forced through her system to give her cancer and heart disease. And remember, the most highly respected of medical professionals, from baby Dr. Benjamin Spock, MD, saying don't give cow's milk to your human baby, to Bill Clinton's doctor, Caldwell Esselstyn, MD, saying heart disease is preventable and reversible. And he'll be on the program this summer to reveal new research. I just had a said hello to him the other day there. So when President Broccoli Obama does his signing statements, only vegans can have babies, and therefore we will wipe out heart disease. What would that mean for America? You know, we spend $444 billion every year. That's the cost of cardiovascular disease, an unnecessary expense, totally preventable. Don't tax the rich, tax the meat eaters. $444 billion. I mean, look at how many wars you can start with that and finance. If you had that money, and if you want more people, well, cardiovascular disease, which means heart disease and stroke account for a third of all U.S. deaths. 83 million Americans have cardiovascular disease. Close to 1 million heart attacks every year. Close to 800,000 strokes. 68 million adults with high blood pressure. 71 million adults with high cholesterol. So another reason to liberate the chickens and go vegan. Well, a President Broccoli Obama would know where to look for weapons of mass destruction, the hamburger bun. And the war wouldn't be in Iraq-nam or Afghan-nam or Iran-nam. We would take on the true number one terrorist, Ronald McDonald, and his axes of evil, McDevils, Murder King, Wendy's, Kills Jr., Jack the Ripper in a Box, KFC, Killing for Cash, Up Chuck E. Cheese, Skin and Snout, that's what a hamburger is all about. So, in America with contraceptives for meat eaters and a population of vegan babies saves, well, that pile of 15,000 animals, that $444 billion annually. And let's say that a vegan lives to be 90, which is, well, actually 19 years younger than vegan Laureen Dinwiddie, celebrating her 109th birthday this month in Portland. Happy birthday, Laureen. We love you so very much. So someone vegan for 90 years would also save 90 acres of trees, 270,000 pounds of carbon emissions, and 27,900,000 gallons of water to grow her food over that of a meat eater. So are you with me for contraceptives for meat eaters only? Then vote for Broccoli Obama. Elect me president, mainly because I don't want to be. I think anyone who wants to be president shouldn't be allowed to be. That should be the first rule. Anyway, what chance would I have anyway without the support of Monsanto? Again, coming up on today's program, organic farmers suing Monsanto. We have the lead plaintiff, Jim Gerritsen, president of the Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association. Coming up next, Karen Davis, United Poultry Concerns. Oh, and you may have seen the front page article in the LA Times this past week about the financial collapse of International Humanities Center, the umbrella nonprofit for hundreds of small nonprofits, including Go Vegan Radio, which has been dealt a severe financial blow by this situation, and our need for funding is even greater right now, this moment. So we've created a new standalone 501c3 nonprofit, has nothing to do with International Humanities Center, and doesn't even exist anymore. So it is urgent that you donate right now. Please go to goveganradio.com, find the donate button there, make your tax deductible donation, or make your check payable to Go Vegan Radio, P.O. Box 475414, San Francisco, California 94147. The situation has put us behind a bit. We really do need your help. We have to pay for airtime every week. We need your help to continue broadcasting. So for archives and podcasts and to donate online, go to goveganradio.com. And to advertise your vegan products, email me. It's bob@goveganradio.com.
I'm a vegan because meat hurts animals.
You'll love Loving Hut, the fastest growing chain of vegan restaurants ever, now with over 200 worldwide. The first one in North America in Milpitas at 516 Barber Lane. Stanford students and faculty have one at 165 University Avenue in Palo Alto. Visit lovinghut.us for the location near you, including three in San Francisco, Oak Ridge Mall in San Jose, and Elk Grove. You'll love Loving Hut. Visit lovinghut.us.
Meat eaters destroy the earth.
Last week on Go Vegan with Bob Linden, time did not permit part two of our discussion with Dr. Karen Davis, founder of United Poultry Concerns. Part one is archived at goveganradio.com, February 12th broadcast date, and we continue that discussion today.
It's Go Vegan with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. And you can advertise your vegan and cruelty-free products and services and help us pay for radio airtime. Email me. It's bob@goveganradio.com. Earlier in the program, we began our discussion with Karen Davis, Dr. Davis, the founder of United Poultry Concerns. And we are concerned about H.R. 3798, the Egg Products Inspection Act. Once again, we maybe didn't answer the question earlier, Karen. We discussed Prop 2 in California, how that if it seemed to get if it were approved by the voters, California would be a cage-free state by 2015. Now we have H.R. 3798. Will that affect California becoming a cage-free state? What does this mean, and what about this turnaround from cage-free to cages, enriched cages? I'll tell you something. I'm really confused, Karen, because I saw this ad by the animal advocate supporting this, what many are calling a rotten egg bill, H.R. 3798. It says ban barren battery cages. I didn't realize that in today's, you know, doublespeak, that doesn't mean ban the cages. It means the barrenness. So shove a stick in and some sand, you know, and call it enriched. And then I had somebody else, a good friend at another animal organization, I'm very surprised to hear me tell me that H.R. 3798 will allow hens can engage in natural behaviors. Is that true at all with this? Because that becomes an advertisement for eggs put out by animal advocates. I don't know where to start again. I'm all over the place. But tell me, Karen, what do you think?
Well, first of all, Bob, the enrichment, the so-called enriched cages would have, and not necessarily all of these things, but maybe one or two or three, they're supposed to include little tiny perches for the hens to sit on. I don't know how many hens could sit on the perches at the same time, but some type of little perch. So a little tiny perch, what they call a nesting area, but the word nest is really a misused word in this case, because what it's more likely going to be is some type of little plastic strip. It's not going to be like a nest, you know, a nice soft, you know, strawy nest. It's not going to be that. And I'll just say parenthetically that when I visited this cage-free operation in Virginia last summer, there was a long strip of plastic behind little curtains, and that's where the hens would go and lay their eggs. And this long plastic strip was sloping, so the eggs would immediately go, you know, roll down, just as they do in the battery cage system, down into the egg processing rooms, and it would also discourage the hens from wanting to sit in these little places.
Well, this is what happens when the egg industry writes legislation, and for some reason, the Humane Society of the United States, well, it's It's part of the egg industry. It is a wholly owned subsidiary promoting H.R. 3798, detrimental to the chickens, obviously. Now they're breathing atmosphere. It's going to be horrible. They're all inside. This doesn't ban battery cages. And like you say, who's going to maintain it? Then these perches, by the way, I understand aren't even up high enough, you know, for them to be anywhere near natural for chickens. Who's going to clean off the perches? And do we have to like cut down the rainforest to have 200?
Yeah, because it even when you just have a few chickens, you know, we have spackling knives. You know, we clean up the droppings every day under the perches. You know, we clean the platforms where some of the chickens like to roost for the night. And the thing is, you have to clean every day, even if you just have a few chickens.
With 94 birds, I see here one of the, you know, they seem to be on different schedules of how many birds and per square inch, etc. But I see you could have 94 birds in an enriched cage, so-called enriched cage, and these are not humane. I want to repeat what Karen Davis is saying here. It's, you know, I mean, the words sound great, enriched colony, nests, and perches and all, but...
These terms are really degraded and devalued from any meaning. They've been almost turned into their opposite, and they don't, you know, they sound nice to people, but that doesn't really reflect what the actual type of furnishings that the birds are gonna have. I mean, you know, you cannot keep places like this clean. I mean, mm-hmm. you cannot crowd creatures together, whether they're chickens or human beings or wherever they may be. You cannot crowd them all together and have cleanliness. Crowding and cleanliness don't go together. Well, and anyway, getting back, let's just talk briefly here about Proposition 2, because I just wanted to say this, that one of the first things that happened to throw the wrench into the Proposition 2, victory and claims of the ban on battery cages in California was this California company called J.S. West & Company. Right after Proposition 2, they opened the first so-called enriched cage system for laying hens in the United States in Livingston, California. And the question they had, and they took it to court to be determined because the Proposition 2 language was so vague, they said, since the 116 square inches per hen in their enriched cage system does not allow a hen to fully extend both wings without bumping into other hens, would they be compliant with California's law, the California law? And the answer is no.
That's for brown birds, and there was a number that was actually smaller for white birds, if I could find it. But
yeah, something like, I don't know, 126, something like that. Yeah.
It's 124, Karen. So as of December 31st, 2029, white birds should have 124 square inches. 144 per brown bird, 124 per white bird.
So the white Leghorn hens, and they are the dominant hen used in the United States egg industry. They get less than a square foot of living space, and that's treated as some sort of
That's a victory in 2029. This is
I won't even be alive then.
Right. And who's going to remember this, right? Who's going to go, hey, remember we passed this thing? And who's going to measure?
Then another thing that's been pointed out, too, is that with these, if there is some type of, like, enclosed place within the enriched cage where it's harder to see the hens, let's say in some type of a so-called nesting area, that maybe that's somewhat set up in some way that it's like secluded from the other parts of the cage, that it's very likely that it would be even more difficult to see what the hen is doing in there. Is she dying, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Is she dead? Mm-hmm. Is she sitting on an egg?
Well, nobody's going to see anything. If you're right, all the sand is going to be up in the air in everybody's face there. You need goggles to go in.
Already the workers who flit in and out of these places wear masks. Anyway, it's really a surrealistic nightmare.
Right.
All around.
This is crazy, and we should remember this does not ban battery cages at all. Basically, it's labeling for cartons of egg products. Basically, it can say cage free, free range, or from caged. I think so. They stay in cages, and people will buy the cheapest, right? If it's a caged product, that'll be the cheapest one. Who cares if the chickens are in cages, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, the majority of people, all these different distinctions. I mean, even people within our own movement, broadly speaking, get confused. Well, what's the difference between cage-free and free-range? Well, is organic cage-free? Is that free-range? And understandably, I mean, because we don't even understand the difference, you know.
Yeah, enriched colony cages. I see that they're trying to define it, and they say that cage-free, well, during egg production, the hens are not housed in a caging device, and then it says free-range during egg production, they're not housed in a caging device, plus they're provided outdoor access, which means, a door could be open at one end of the barn, but they're afraid to go to it,
Well, the egg industry, in collusion with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, who, by the way, they've made every effort to reduce the amount of time that organic hens who are required to be outside for some portion of some days at least, they've made every effort to prevent, to come up with excuses like bird flu, a duck flying overhead could drop something onto the ground that would cause the hens to develop bird flu, or that it's too rainy out, or it's too cold, or it's too this or too that. They've come up with every excuse in the world to not have to allow, let's say, the organic hens to have any type of outdoor access. And then, like this place I visited, I keep mentioning Black Eagle Farm in central Virginia, because it's just such a typical type of cage-free organic operation. It's just the hens are just hugging the sides of the outside of the big, long, warehousey building, because first of all, I mean, there are no trees planted or anything. There's chickens come from the jungles, the tropical forest, the jungle of Southeast Asia and the foothills of the Himalayan mountains. That's where they evolved. And that essential nature of the chicken has not changed at all through all the centuries and all the manipulations that we've done to them. Chickens love a foresty, woodsy type of environment. And they like to come out into the yard area, like at our sanctuary here in Virginia. But they like, and they need, really, for their psychological well-being and their social well and just flock safety, they need to be able to run to, like, where the trees are. If a hawk comes overhead or something like that, they like to be under trees. They like to sit on branches and tree limbs and bushes and stuff. So when there's just a big, empty expanse of space, well, it's just not inviting, and it doesn't really answer their needs. Now, there's no question that at least something like that is still better than being entangled in wire cages.
Sometimes in this case, when we say better, we probably mean to say less horrific, because it's never it's never better. So we've been talking to Karen Davis of United Poultry Concerns, upc-online.org. California does not go cage-free in 2015, as we thought we were promised by Prop 2. And my animal rights friend who said that with this H.R. 3798, hens can engage in natural behaviors, I think you totally disagree. We have 30 seconds left, Karen.
Their natural behaviors cannot possibly be exercised in a little tiny a cage with a teensy furniture. That type of language is just euphemism. People who talk that way are either lying or they simply don't know what chickens really do and what they really need.
Right. I mean, they start off having their faces cut off in the air. Now engage in natural behavior after we've cut off your face, you know, your beak, which is so important.
Well, right. I mean, their faces are mutilated. It's a part of how we act in a way that is wrong towards these birds, that is, as speaking as so-called animal protectionists or whatever, is to diminish who they are in public discourse by suggesting that these birds are so limited that they can express themselves in a world of cages. I mean, to me, it's a deep betrayal of these birds for those of us who claim to advocate for them to suggest that they, quote unquote, can express their natural behavior in a world of total imprisonment. That suggests to people that there's not much to these birds if they can actually find expression and do their activities in such a confined setting.
So you say free the chickens by going vegan.
I mean, there's every reason in the world. I mean, first and foremost, to me, it's the ethical treatment of animals. To take animals off the land, to take them off the earth, and lock them up in hell holes, filthy in prisons where they never ever experience any sunshine, any fresh air, never set foot on the earth. I mean, this is the deepest kind of criminality. We have a criminal relationship with these animals. So that's the first and foremost reason for people to wash their hands of the whole business, because it cannot be made humane, and we don't need to eat those products derived from their bodies. And that makes it really, disgraceful.
Yeah.
They're going through all this for nothing, because we don't need, we can get all the nutrition we need from, nutritious plant sources, and that's where we should be getting our nutrition. So it also bothers me that an organization like the Humane Society of the United States is actually promoting the idea that you can somehow eat animal products and get rid of factory farming, which is 100% untrue, and also has some awareness of the environmental, the huge environmental problems being caused by, it's not just factory farming, it's that you've got, 6-7 billion people all gobbling up animal products. So, and as long as you've got this demand, which actually, the Humane Society of the United States is really encouraging. They're just saying, just get rid of factory farming. Well, you're still going to use the same amount of resources, even if water, food has to be grown, all the different things. No matter how, this huge number of animals are being raised.
Right. There's not enough land to graze.
Well, yes. I mean, that's another thing.
Right.
Let's say for cattle or pigs and chickens and sheep and goats and turkeys and so ducks and so on, how much land are people, human beings, going to be willing to devote to, let's say, allow 65 billion, that's the current, roughly the current global number of farmed animals right now, which is predicted to double by 2050. Now, how much land are we going to be willing to give to these animals to have, let's say, a pasture or free range? Can you even imagine it?
Yeah. It's crazy. You and I, two of the only sane people in the world, but what can we do? Okay.
Well, I do like to think there are more. I think even in our movement, this particular legislation and the issues surrounding it are causing some people to in the animal protection or animal rights movement to pause and to wonder, well, is this really the best we can do for these animals? Is it the only thing? Because that's how this current legislation is being promoted. This is the best we can do for these animals. It's the only thing we can do. I mean, one of the interesting things is how Gene Gregory, the head of United Egg Producers, is, according to him, in a, let's say, for example, a letter in the agribusiness publication Feedstuffs, he explained in the letter that, you know, there was a time back like 2008, 2009, when United Egg Producers actually felt HSUS was a threat to the U.S. egg industry, that they were worried that, you know, about these state ballot initiatives, which I think could have been, you know, introduced in, I think, 24 states. They were worried there was going to be a hodgepodge of rules and regulations, all of which would be disruptive of the egg industry. And, of course, yeah, good idea. Disrupt the egg industry.
Exactly.
You know? I mean, we're supposed to be animal protection.
We're animal people. Right. Disrupt the egg industry. Right.
So he says that he went to Wayne Pacelli, the head of HSUS, asking, could you do something so we could work together to ensure the future of the U.S. egg industry, and, you know, in return, we would agree to comply with some of your demands. So it looks like the egg, you know, from what Gene Gregory is saying, you know, they made the overtures to the Humane Society of the United States to try to get help in on behalf of the industry, and they, you know, by getting, you know, having some kind of a federal law that would completely supersede and override any state legislation, and yet, as I understand it, the Humane Society of the United States is pretty much saying, well, we have, you know, this is the best we could come up with. This is the, you know, this was all we could come up with. Well, that's not what Gene Gregory is saying. He's saying that HSUS...
Karen Davis, United Poultry Concerns, we are totally out of time. Thank you for being with us today on Go Vegan with Bob Linden.
McDonald's, yuck!
Here's an easy way to create more delicious, healthful, and affordable meals. Visit recipefactory.net, where you can analyze existing recipes or create new ones, customize to use or avoid specific ingredients, meet your dietary, aesthetic, and budget requirements, check complete protein, inflammation, and glycemic load, create food and meal substitutes, upload your recipe creations, and download others. Visit recipefactory.net. Create at recipefactory.net.
Do you know the way to eat in San Jose? A special treat, no meat in San Jose. It's Vegetarian House Organic Vegan Restaurant, 520 East Santa Clara Street, downtown San Jose. Vegetarian House, a world-class dining experience since 1994, featuring fine cuisine from around the world. Vietnam, China, Thailand, India, Europe, the Middle East, and the Americas. Made from local organic GMO-free ingredients. Sauces, bean curd, and noodles made in-house. Powered by rooftop solar panels, Vegetarian House, concerned with the environment, compassion for animals, and your health, offers to-go packaging that's biodegradable and compostable. See the extensive menu at vegetarianhouse.us, including appetizers, soups, salad, sandwiches, dazzling desserts, organic fruit and vegetable juices. Vegetarian House, 520 East Santa Clara Street, San Jose. Catering available. Open for weekday lunch specials from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Dinner 5 to 9. Saturday and Sunday, 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Call 408-292-3798. VegetarianHouse.us.
Cows, pigs, and chickens don't want to be fooled.
This is Go Vegan with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com, for 11 years now, broadcasting as heard on Air America, only with your support, because we have to purchase the airtime. It seems like Monsanto owns everything in this country, and here you have your one little blade of organic grass, you know, coming through the concrete, speaking out against Monsanto for the longest time. You can support the show with a tax-deductible donation. The address to mail your check or
the website where you can make an online donation, goveganradio.com. Find the address there too. So, you know, the unsung hero in society is the farmer, right? Yeah, I mean, you like to eat, you need to eat, and you couldn't or wouldn't without the farmer. We really owe an enormous debt of gratitude to the organic farmer of our food, the fruits, vegetables, nuts, grains, seeds, beans. They're really the lifesavers, aren't they, the farmers? And right now they're in the fight of their lives for their survival. Actually, it seems to be a fight for nature, too, against a most powerful and evil corporation, Monsanto. And today we have the honor of speaking with Jim Gerritsen. He's an organic potato farmer and seed keeper in Maine. Jim is the president of the Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association, OSGATA. He's also the lead plaintiff in a lawsuit against Monsanto, representing 300,000 members in the cause of the plaintiffs, family farmers, seed businesses, organic associations. So welcome to Go Vegan with Bob Linden. Jim, how are you today?
I'm doing fine, Bob. Thank you for having me on.
Well, great. Thank you for being here. I know that things were happening in the court recently. You have... You are suing Monsanto, and what is the injustice that the farmers are suffering right now that led you to this lawsuit?
Well, the situation is this: organic farmers, and that's who are in the plaintiff group that we've compiled, were at risk of being contaminated by Monsanto seed. For example, when their corn crop, Roundup Ready corn crop, could be in pollination, the wind could drift that pollen onto our farms and contaminate our crop. So when that happens, not only do we lose the value of our crop, for example, we raise organic seed corn, that's one of our crops. Should that become contaminated by Monsanto's Roundup Ready seed, we've lost our value. The value of our seed crop has been extinguished because of that contamination. But above and beyond that, the viewpoint of Monsanto is that by virtue of that contamination incident, we have come into possession of their transgenic technology, and we have not paid technology royalty payments on it, and
Jim,
we may be subject to a patent infringement lawsuit for that possession.
We're
going to court to receive protection from that claim.
Jim, it almost sounds like a comedy routine. This is beyond belief. The fact that Monsanto can contaminate your crop and then sue you for not paying for growing Monsanto products, is that what we're hearing here?
It would be hilarious were it not true. And the impact is already going on. Lawsuit has been filed as a preemptive lawsuit under a law that Congress passed called the Declaratory Judgment Act, which allows individuals who are fearful of a patent infringement lawsuit from appealing to the court for a ruling. In our case, we're asking for protection, an interpretation that would grant us exemption from that patent infringement claim by Monsanto. And I'm absolutely in agreement with you that this is an incredible system of situation of perversity in which a farmer who is the innocent victim should then become another type of victim by being bullied by an abusive patent infringement lawsuit. But this is the situation as it exists right now. Monsanto has standing to sue us. There is no fair use equivalent in patent law. It doesn't matter how much of their patented material we have or even how it got onto our farms, but we are subject to patent infringement litigation should it somehow in some way end up on our farms. We don't think it's fair, we don't think it's right, we don't think it's just, and we've gone to court to get protection.
Well, it is definitely not fair, right, or just. This is one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard in my life. Basically, there you are on your farm, minding your own business, growing organic crops, and you're not even secure on your farm. It's like you've been invaded. You know, there's this trespasser, Monsanto, and then Monsanto wants to charge you for it. We're talking to Jim Gerritsen of the Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association. How can people help you? I mean, this is insane.
Well, they can tell their friends. Part of our effort is, of course, to win in the courtroom so that we gain that protection. But part of our larger goal is to help to educate eaters out there about their rights in the food system. And if organic farmers, if organic seed growers such as the lead plaintiff can't grow clean seed free of contamination, there's no way that the organic crop growers can grow crops that are free of GMO contamination. And we've been farming organically here in Maine for 35 years on our farm, and we sell direct to our customers. So one thing that we are very clear on is that the organic customer that is buying organic product and very willing to pay a premium, because it does cost us more money to raise a good quality crop than other people that raise lesser quality crops, they're willing to pay that, but they do expect that organic integrity includes freedom from GMO content. And we want the opportunity to farm the way we want on our farms organically. We want to raise the best quality food for our own families and for our customers. And we want the freedom to do that. We want the freedom from invasion and trespass by Monsanto's GMO crops. And we want freedom from having to defend ourselves. In this day and age, it's pretty clear that when a big corporation like Monsanto goes after a family farmer, even if for a frivolous point as this, we could easily go bankrupt simply trying to defend and clear our good name from this false accusation. But they do have standing, and this is a very big concern for us.
This is very insane. And what are the risks of crops becoming contaminated by Monsanto GMO? I mean, how much of Monsanto crops are planted around the country now?
Well, the acreage is in the tens of millions of acres. It's very extensive. But to this point in time, it's limited to six primary crops, and that would be corn and soybeans, cotton, sugar beets, canola, and one more that's escaping me right now. But those are the primary crops.
Was it alfalfa?
Yes, alfalfa, that's right. That was deregulated 12 months ago. And alfalfa is the fifth largest crop grown in the United States. It's a major input for dairy cattle and beef cattle. And we're very much concerned that the organic dairy farmers that are producing high-quality organic milk are going to have a problem keeping that milk free of GMOs because of expected contamination of the alfalfa seed supply, because of this new application of Roundup Ready alfalfa. So it's a very big concern.
But, well, Jim, this is a vegan show, so I think you just gave people a reason not to drink milk necessarily, some new concerns there.
Well,
but what's shocking to me is that sugar beets, you're saying, alfalfa, I mean, cotton, I mean, these are major crops, and it's like 80% of corn and 80% of soy right now. So the farmers, the organic farmers, you know, located nearby are really under a high risk, aren't they?
Yes, it depends on the specific biology of the plant. Canola and corn are the two plants that have extremely mobile pollen. They're annual crops, so the contamination can occur in the current season. So, say, as I said before, organic seed corn is one of the crops that we grow on our farm here in northern Maine. Contamination, should it come in from a neighboring farm that is growing Roundup Ready corn, the pollen that could come in, and if there was a common timing of the pollination window, we could become contaminated because of that pollen coming in and contaminating our corn crop. Canola is a similar situation. And one of the very real impacts, which has already occurred, is that organic farmers have stopped growing crops like organic corn, organic canola, and organic soybeans because they are so concerned about contamination from their neighbors by Roundup Ready or Monsanto seed that they've stopped growing these crops for fear that they will be accused of patent infringement.
Yeah,
so
and
has already taken a hit on their income and their livelihood.
And you talk about GMOs as contamination. I think a lot of people would be shocked to learn that, you know, 80% of what's on their supermarket shelves would be GMO, but we're not allowed to label it here. And, you know, it's a very... You're up against a very, very powerful company in Monsanto, you know, with people in the highest places. And it's strange that we would somehow want to get our food from a company that in the past has been so toxic, giving us Agent Orange and DDT and, you know, burning up Vietnam with Agent Orange, you know, dioxin and PCBs and aspartame and, you know, bovine growth hormone. I mean, it's like, I don't know that we really want our food from this company yet. You know, sometimes I almost call him President Monsanto Obama with his appointees to trade commissions. He reappointed Michael Taylor, a Monsanto employee, a senior advisor in the FDA, commissioner on food safety. That's where you have Monsanto employees, former employees. Clarence Thomas on the Supreme Court, former Monsanto employee. Linda Fisher of the EPA. I mean, it just goes on, and, you know, Good luck. The State Department is budgeted to promote GMOs around the world. How are you going to win, Jim Gerritsen of the Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association?
Well, we've seen, as you say, we've seen some tremendous corruption and collusion with our governmental system, particularly in the administrative branch and the executive branch. Monsanto and the other biotech companies are very free at giving campaign contributions to both Republicans and Democrats. They're used to having a revolving door among...
Whoops, are you there? And, we have you back, so you can start now.
Well, no doubt Monsanto and the other biotech corporations have given heavy campaign contributions to those in the executive branch and in the legislative branch, both Republicans and Democrats. This is one reason that we've sought refuge with the judicial branch. It is the last independent, strong, courageous branch that the organic community has had great success in challenging GMO crops. We've gone to court twice with Roundup Ready sugar beets and received two victories in court. We think that it's the judicial branch that can give us the protection that the family farmers need, and that's why we've headed to federal district court in Manhattan.
Okay, well, we hope it doesn't go up to the Supreme Court. Well, maybe Clarence Thomas would recuse himself then, being a former Monsanto employee, and I think there may be another Supreme Court justice or two who's been involved with a decision related to Monsanto and GMOs. So, this is an issue near and dear to my heart. I may be the first person ever arrested protesting GMOs many years ago in California. I had the megaphone and we were near a government building and I was saying, we don't want no potato engineered by Monsanto. So I was either arrested for the rhyme or the content there, but nothing to laugh about. Monsanto had a potato out at the time that actually was a pesticide, and I know you're an organic potato grower, right? So.
Yes, and one of the two facilities that Monsanto had in the United States for the propagation of their what they called their new leaf GMO potatoes was right here in northern Maine in the town of Island Falls. The other one was out in your direction over in Boise, Idaho. So it was a technology that came in and was used by growers for about 5 years, but very interestingly enough, there was market rejection of GMO potatoes. And over 10 years ago, the market rejected GMO potatoes and they were pulled from the market. And you cannot find a GMO potato in the United States today as a result.
That's good. Yeah, we didn't like the idea of a beetle biting into the potato and dying. That made the potato a pesticide itself. Maybe I was just arrested for the grammar of that. I don't know. We're out of time, Jim Gerritsen, but I want to follow your story as you go along here with the lawsuit. What website can people go to learn more and get involved?
Well,
I know you, you also have a farmers. I believe you have a farmers travel fund. However, people can help.
Yes, well, people can go to learn more at the Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association website, and it's osgata.org. That's osgata.org. And as you say, we do have a farmer travel fund that we've set up to allow farmers to get to court when these hearings come up. As you know, farmers struggle and work long hours, and there tends not to be a lot of money left over at the end of paying bills. So if folks want to help contribute, it's something that we can use. OSGATA is the trade organization of the organic seed industry, and we represent organic seed farmers, organic seed companies, organic seed breeders, and affiliate organizations and individuals that support the development and protection of organic seed.
Well, thank you so very much for what you do, and we are on your side. Anything we can do to help, let us know. Thanks, Jim Gerritsen.
Meat cuts life short.
You'll love Loving Hut, the fastest growing chain of vegan restaurants ever, now with over 200 worldwide, the first one in North America in Milpitas at 516 Barber Lane. Stanford students and faculty have one at 165 University Avenue in Palo Alto. Visit lovinghut.us for the location near you, including three in San Francisco, Oak Ridge Mall in San Jose, and Elk Grove. You'll love Loving Hut. Visit lovinghut.us.
This is Go Vegan with Bob Linden.
We continue with the Linsanity on the radio. Actually, it's Lindensanity. And that's a scary thought when I am the most sane one in the room. But in a radio studio when you're by yourself, you're never alone with a schizophrenic. For vegan cooking classes and events in the San Francisco Bay Area, visit the website of the San Francisco Vegetarian Society, sfvs.org. I was the guest on a radio program last week, The Many Moods of Vince Daniels in San Bernardino, and I had a debate with a representative of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Very intense debate. I put the link on my Facebook pages, the Bob Linden Facebook pages. If you want me to send you the link, email me. It's bob@goveganradio.com. Well, the benefits of going vegan aren't just for your human family members. Your companion animals deserve to be vegan, too, and they will enjoy Evolution Diet, proven for 23 years. And you can take the slaughterhouse waste and the diseased animals off the plates of your dogs and cats. Just because your meat, dog, and cat food says organic doesn't mean diseased animals aren't used. So I suggest you call Evolution Diet for dogs, cats, ferrets, 651-221-9056. 651-221-9056. Mention Bob Linden. You get a 5% discount. Go Vegan Radio gets a donation. The website, petfoodshop.com. Again, 651-221-9056. As you heard with the demise of International Humanities Center, we really need your help. This is the time to donate to Go Vegan with Bob Linden. If you've been holding off for the last 11 years, well, now's the time, okay? Donate online. Find the donate button at goveganradio.com. Make your check payable to Go Vegan Radio, P.O. Box 475-414, San Francisco 94147. Advertise your vegan products. Email bob@govegan.com. VeganRadio.com, and for archives and podcasts, and to donate online, which we really need your support, go to GoVeganRadio.com. Greetings, Bob Linden here with the Go Vegan Friday feature on 960 KNEW. You just have to hear Go Vegan with Bob Linden this Sunday at 3 p.m. Organic farmers are suing Monsanto. And my guest is Jim Gerritsen, president of the Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association, and he's also the lead plaintiff in the lawsuit against Monsanto. And farmers are the unsung heroes in society. You like to eat, you want to eat, you have to eat. So let's remember the farmer, especially when under this brutal attack from one of the most powerful and evil corporations in America. You just won't believe the details of this outrageous story this Sunday, 3 p.m. Also, we ran out of time last week in our discussion with Karen Davis of United Poultry Concerns about H.R. 3798, the Egg Products Inspection Act, and why Karen thinks it's a rotten egg bill that's rotten for chickens and should be defeated. Karen also has harsh criticism for the Humane Society of the United States for partnering with United Egg Producers, for supporting overturning Prop 2, and other reasons. Also this week on Go Vegan with Bob Linden, with contraception in the news, what would it mean to this country if I had my way? Mandatory contraception for all meat eaters. Well, I'll be your best friend on Facebook if you find me as Bob Linden. And broadcast of Go Vegan with Bob Linden is made possible in the Bay Area by Vegetarian House, world-class organic vegan dining in downtown San Jose at 520 East Santa Clara Street. Visit vegetarianhouse.us. And by Loving Hut Vegan Restaurants with over 200 worldwide, the first one in Milpitas at 516 Barber Lane, in Palo Alto at 165 University Avenue, and for the Loving Hut location near you in the Bay Area, visit lovinghut.us. For vegan cooking classes and events around the Bay Area, visit the website of the San Francisco Vegetarian Society, sfvs.org. And you can order vegan dog food and vegan cat food from Evolution Diet. Mention Bob Linden, get a 5% discount. Call 651-221-9056 or visit petfoodshop.com, 651-221-9056. Advertise your vegan products. Email me. It's Bob at goveganradio.com. You know, we have to purchase airtime every week, and you may have heard about the problems of International Humanities Center, our umbrella nonprofit, going out of business. Well, that has left a severe financial challenge for Go Vegan Radio. Please support us now with a tax-deductible donation. Make your check payable to Go Vegan Radio, P.O. Box 475-414, San Francisco 94147, or donate online, goveganradio.com.